contextual doesn't mean what we remember from 2014 desktop contextual targeting, that, oh, this banner is, you know, alongside an article about whatever. No, it's about different games genres and being very specific about the genre of the game.
Welcome to Mobile Growth and Pancakes, a podcast by Stormhaven. We break down how and why mobile apps grow. In each episode, we invite a mobile growth expert onto the show to break down a specific mobile growth strategy, how it worked, why it worked, and what they would do differently. I'm your host, Esther Schatz. Welcome to Mobile Growth and Pancakes. I am very excited to be joined today by, the Israeli way, so bear with me. Ofer Yudai is president at Fiber. And Ofer, can you introduce yourself quickly to everyone listening?
Yes. Hi, Esther. Yes. So my name is Ofer. President at Fiber, the mobile mediation company recently acquired by Digital Turbine. Spent the last 10 years in the Bay Area and the last 15 years, if you can believe it, in mobile advertising. I'm also the co-founder of Interactive that Fiber acquired, that I think was one of the very first companies to do in-game advertising on Nokia devices. And that's pretty much gives away my age.
it's crazy to think that mobile advertising has been around for 15 years. It's
unbelievable. Yes.
Yeah, hard to hear out loud. So you've been in since the beginning. One of the questions I have to ask, obviously a lot has changed because I'd imagine you're not overly focused on Nokia devices today. What do you think is kind of the biggest shift between how you're looking at in-app mobile advertising today versus what you were doing 15 years ago?
Oh, wow. I think one of the biggest changes, and if we look at the context of 10 years for a second, 10 years ago, I remember visiting Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, right? And people asked, when will brands, like the brand advertising, will jump and come to mobile? And every year it was like, this is the year of mobile advertising. Now it's the year where we'll see brands finally coming to mobile. We still have this vision and this dream of brands coming to mobile. And it's every year it's getting better and better. But nevertheless, what we see right now is most advertisers, most marketers are very much ROAS driven. And we all ask ourselves, how can we get the best results? It's getting even more lighted up now with iOS 14.5. Depending when this will be broadcasted, before or after.
I think it's coming on Monday, so it's probably going to be after. We're coming to you from the past. Yeah, it's about to drop. Yeah,
so now that we have iOS 14.5 and IDFA went away, brings up more and more questions. How do you balance privacy and performance and measurability? Because that's why we are here. Those questions are very interesting for me.
So let's go straight to it, because we're talking about a shift that since I haven't been in for 15 years, but in the 8 years since I've been in the space, I think the IDFA deprecation is probably the bigger change that I can think of that's happened lately in a huge revolution. And making the move from user level ROAS real-time data to understanding what to do. How do you even begin to tackle the idea of creating value and structuring efforts in a way where you're making sure that you're not losing retention? Because I think with mobile, the big challenge is, you don't have that immediacy. The download usually is free. The first login to the app isn't necessarily the conversion that you're optimizing for. So how are you even structuring that mental side of, okay, we're about to begin in a world where we don't have this user level data? How do we look at ad structures? How do we look at success in our efforts?
Yeah. So first I start by reminding myself that user acquisition is not going away. Like the notion of, oh, so maybe I should shift my budgets from iOS to Android. Those were like some of the preliminary thoughts when this was announced, okay? User acquisition is key for every business. So with that in mind, then you're asking, so what do we do? What are the alternatives? So we will have some user level targeting for opted-in traffic. I personally think that those numbers would be very, very low, but very soon we'll see exactly where they land. But for some traffic where you do get consent and you do get the IDFA, you can use some of the data and maybe extrapolate from it. But for the vast majority of traffic without IDFA, I think we need to start employing a more of a contextual view to targeting. And contextual doesn't mean what we remember from 2014 desktop contextual targeting that, oh, this banner is, you know, alongside an article about whatever. No, it's about different games genres and being very specific about the genre of the game. You know, I see more and more marketers cataloging the games and the apps in a very granular way. So the marketers cataloging, you know, games and apps in a very granular way that allows you to better target against other games or other apps. So for instance, if I look at hyper-casual, which is one of those areas when you say, oh, what will happen to hyper-casual? I think that, you know, you have a very high level of a affiliation between, oh, this is a tap-tap-jump game, so I can find similar games to attach to it. So it's less about the user, it's more about the content. So that's one point.
So I want to make sure that I'm following this. It's basically saying, okay, we're losing, the way we're used to targeting users, which is to ensure that we're creating lookalike groups or using whatever data we have for that. And it's more saying, okay, we're assuming that, you know, user base X is located here, and this is the area that we're trying to conquer. So let's make sure that our app becomes visible here, where this user base is hanging out.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. And look, I separate between targeting and attribution, because once IDs are going away, those are the two areas. How do I target? And then how do I attribute what happened in the game? And it's almost like a separate discussion. And there are so many, new tools and new ways to look at attribution. You know, different MMPs are pushing for it, you know. I really like what, you know, Algolift are doing as part of Wangenlau, trying to look at, you know, how do I predict that? So that's one thing. But on the targeting side, again, you have the context of the game or the app, and then you have the context of the user. Because again, to be completely privacy safe and without storing any data, I can still give the marketer a clues about the impression. For instance, what is the average a click-through rate of the user in this game? Nothing ID, nothing identifiable here, but you know, this user tend to click and engage with rewarded video. This user typically watches, you know, rewarded videos to the end or not. There is a lot of information that can inform the advertiser in real time about, okay, so is it a CPCV campaign? Or maybe I should look for creatives that are more sensitive to clicks. For instance, part of the contextual signals that we share are, what are the last ads, the last bundles or games the user saw? So, okay, and engaged with. Okay, so this user is engaging with match 3 games. I can use this type of information.
So it's essentially shifting the view of, instead of looking at things like in-app purchases and specific engagements, that you lose that ability to share. You're looking at contextual engagement. This is how you interact with an ad. This is what happens when it comes in place. This is what we're looking at. And then you're creating, you know, it's different signals, certainly, but you're still saying basically, this is my proxy for understanding value, the way somebody engages. If somebody's watching till the end and skipping back through a video, you know, we've hit something, we've gotten some level of engagement. We have to assume that that's going to lead to the yield that we're looking for afterwards.
Yes. And you know, it's going to be interesting for publishers with a healthy in-app purchase business and activity. Some of them may start saying, you know what? So I, as the publisher, I know if this user right now is a top spender or not. The question is, do I want to share this information with the advertiser? Because why would I let this user go away? But you can put a price tag and you can say, you know what? I can use my first party data and segment spenders from non-spenders in such a way and say, you want access to my top spenders, that's fine, but you'll have to pay a premium versus my non-spenders. And this is a way to use first party data in the way you monetize your audience.
All right, I need more info here because this sounds super interesting and I'm not sure that I followed all the way through.
So again, it's all a matter of how the publisher is looking at the first party data and their audience base. I think the evolution of how publishers will monetize in iOS 14 and above, and how mediation platforms and different tools will come in place, is to allow you to segment audience based on your first party data without sharing IDs, but still pricing them differently. So again, as the publisher, I can tell, oh, Esther just came in and she's a top spender. I want to show no ads to Esther whatsoever to protect her. Or I want to let only my non-competitive advertisers to be in front of Esther, and they will have to pay a premium because you are a top spender. So like all of those decisions will be on the publisher side.
That's super interesting. No, I like that. So basically what you're saying is, you know, I can't control my targeting necessarily, but I can expose who my users are. I can control who my users are exposed to. And I decide, you know, I know who my whales are. I know who my casual players are. I basically decide what am I willing to share at what price and, you know, kind of play. Interesting. I haven't, that's actually, I think the first, I've been talking about IDFA a lot and pretty sure that's the first time I'm hitting this. And I, super, super interesting.
Thank you.
I'm wondering how that works. You know, if we look at the developers who are multi-title developers and kind of have the cross promotional network, I have to say, I expect more and more companies to. We talked about where hyper casual is going. I expect a lot of people to acquire hyper casual studios just to get access to a mass audience group and kind of put them in their network sooner or later. How would that strategy work out in terms of your own internal advertising? You know, how do you look at your cannibalization versus your ability to grow within the network of people you've already acquired?
Yeah, and look, you're right. And we've seen it. We've seen companies out there already acquiring because as long as it's, you know, the same company, you can share ID. So cross promo can actually work very well. And I definitely see how, you know, publishers are now managing monetization, cross promotion, inner purchase, special offers, and decide exactly per user what to do. The only point I will highlight is that where it gets tricky, this data worth gold. So how exactly I, as the publisher, will share this information with a platform, and what will the platform do with the data? And if, you know, this platform also has other businesses that may compete with my own business, this is where it may get a bit tricky. I'm guessing that's why we see more publishers looking at, you know, either owning mediation, building mediation, or working with mediation platforms in such a way that creates like a walled garden around the data. So in the next year or so, I believe we'll see more developments there as well.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, anyway, we were talking about preloaded apps. That's what I was about to ask you about before we were so rudely interrupted. I think it's you know, a really interesting avenue to understand. We talk so much about acquisition and getting users to download. What happens when the app just exists from the second you power up?
Yeah, so this is like a fascinating area. I'm still learning myself. Preloads are so different than just, you know, buying on the open web. The experience is different. You know, when you buy a new device and you boot it up and you set it up, you have a wizard where you can basically choose personalized content that will be ready for your device from the get-go. But from this point onward, the discovery, playing for the first time, you know, that's something we need to definitely educate ourselves. But it's a massive, massive opportunity, especially without IDs.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. If we don't need to kind of create that that audience group, it becomes a really interesting opportunity. Is it possible yet in iOS devices, or is it only Google Play?
It's only Android devices at the moment. You know, here in the US at least, you know, iOS is a very big piece, and we talk a lot about iOS, especially now with IDFA going away. But Android is a massive part of the market. We are talking about, I think, more than 60 million new devices every quarter or so. So it's a big opportunity.
And then I guess the question becomes, how do you get somebody, you know, first of all, obviously you have to be somewhat selective in a preload, right? If we start and you open your phone and there's 600 apps, you're not going to get the power that you want. So we've got to be selective there. And how do we look at, kind of getting users to notice that content? So sometimes you'll have it on your home screen and you still need that context to kind of push them in where you're looking to get them. Any insights on that and how that works?
Two good points, Esther. One, a very limited supply on the device, right? We don't want to, you know, overflow the user with options. Also, the experience have to be smooth. There are just a handful of apps available at the device when you put it up. So typically the recommendation is for those evergreen games and apps. Think about the game that, you know, more likely to be played for a long period of time, right? If it's a solitaire game or a branded match 3 game, probably more likely than a short-lived hyper-casual title. But then you ask about how do we make sure that people notice. And that's the interesting part where I still learn every day about Digital Turbine. There are a suite of tools to bring that game into attention. If those are notifications on the device, if it's about remarketing and retargeting, so you play some other game and the ad will tell you, hey, did you know you have this game on the device, and deep linking to automatically open it up. So there are a suite of tools that together create very high engagement levels. And from what I've seen so far, much, much higher conversion rates than open web.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, I'm wondering also, is there a way to use demographics there? I mean, when you're looking at, you know, if I'm imagining solitaire, for example, my mom, when she opens her device for the first time, she's going to play solitaire. She's used to having solitaire on her digital devices. My younger sister, maybe not so much. Maybe there's a better app for her to see. Yeah, but she's married. She was a very young bride. But yes, is there a way to kind of use, I guess, I don't know if it's based on a login or based maybe on the newness of the device. Is there any way to customize and tailor and say, I don't want to be on every device. I want to hit this demographic.
Yeah, I'll answer with a question because I don't know yet enough. But what we are seeing now with iOS, and look, I think Android will follow suit again with Android ID, is the balance of power between carriers, OEMs, and the OS. So we'll have to see how much data will become available from within the platform or from the carrier, and then what we as an industry can use, again, in a privacy way where we respect privacy, we respect opt-in and opt-outs. Again, that's something that we'll see in the next couple of years. This isn't an overnight change. But targeting it right now, again, you can target just like you do on any other platform.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I think it's it would be unrealistic to not stay flexible, because I totally agree. Apple and Google don't, they're not too far behind each other. Yeah, one makes one change, the other one's coming within the next year or so to make sure that they're on the ball as well.
I tell you what, Esther, one point to remember, we talk about preloading, you know, what's really unique is the scale. Because for the right advertiser, you can basically put yourself on literally millions of devices very, very fast. Like, you are there, you are on the device. It's very hard to replicate that scale when you buy open web, when you buy a network. I mean, you can, it's a matter of money, but here, the math works very well, that you can just preload on millions of devices. You can target the devices that you want, the regions that you want, and you have huge audience. That's quite remarkable.
Crazy scale, crazy scale. Yeah. And how do you, the question is, your success metric has to change, right? What's the KPI you're looking at to understand if you've had the right success in a native app implementation?
Yeah, also I would say, you know, it does change from advertiser to advertiser. We do recommend to have a slightly wider attribution window than, you know, just when you buy open web and there is a view through of like a day or not. Here, from the moment the device was shipped and booted for the first time, we should expect more than 7 days, right, until the user may open the game or the app for the first time. So that's the only recommendation. But from this point, the KPIs are the same. The KPIs, whatever you have a ROAS target or kind of a CPA.
Retention, engagement, yeah, everything comes down to.
Yes, it's the same audience.
All right, I'm going to make you be a fortune teller for a minute. We sync back this time 1 year from now. What do you think? What do you think performance marketing looks like for mobile advertisers?
I think we will see. We'll be here in a year from now. We will laugh about the, you know, a third quarter of 2021, how people freaked out after the launch, and how it did recover in Q4, and how Q1 is much stronger. So I do see this in this wide U shape from starting, you know, now when iOS went away until we recover. And we'll probably also talk about all the new channels that performance marketers adapted. If it's influencers, if it's preloading, just the media mix will change.
Totally agree. Because the second you, you've had, I think, performance marketing, the networks that have been successful until now have benefited off that immediacy, that real tangible ROI. And now we give such an interesting case to the alternative channels that you felt like measurement wasn't as immediate, it wasn't as solid as before, but you've missed, you know, many, many developers, I think, have missed massive markets because they've been so reluctant to lose that granular piece of data. And now you're giving, you know, that same chance. You can discover all of a sudden there's networks that are performing much better for you. You just have to be able to analyze it in a more aggregative way instead of, you know, incrementality, instead of that immediacy and that user by user feedback you were looking for before.
Absolutely. If to that point, I think, ASO will be a big part of it. And you see also a part of iOS 14.5, more placements in the search page and the recommendation page are now being, you know, you can trade. So that will be a big part as well.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're also, we've always seen the connection between paid and organic. On the ASO side, the more you spend, the more your rankings tend to benefit and the more you're improving. And I think now when we're looking at, you know, you tend to acquire much more broadly or acquiring a different set of users, the connection between those two pathways becomes even more important. And understanding that pure impact, not just what you've been looking at until now, which is I'm in my Facebook dashboard and I'm looking at my ROAS per ad. You've got to start to kind of force yourself into true performance, holistic performance behavior, which is, I think, awesome, because now you're getting, in a way, more accurate, even if you're losing that level of granularity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We talked before about measurements and attributions. You know, to your point, how do we measure? I can see how we are moving into more and more incrementality testing, because we won't be able to point to a specific user, but I just opened a new channel, just introduced some more ASO. What does it mean for me? How can I see the impact on my business throughout incrementality? A year from now, also a big part.
So now you're committed to coming back a year from now, so we can assess how accurate you went. Amazing. Before we move on to, we have a quick fire round where you're going to have to answer questions very quickly. But before we move on to there, you know, is there anything else that you think is really important to be said as we're at the cusp of this massive change that's coming into our industry?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm also intrigued about global expansion and like how different markets operate. We talk a lot about North America, but, you know, LATAM and APAC, are those markets in 2020 grew like crazy. And I also think user acquisition strategies obviously must be localized. So, you know, again, a year from now, I would love to see also how we adapt and are successful also in those markets, both on the monetization side to fuel the business and, of course, user acquisition. That's very interesting.
Definitely agreed. All right. Are you ready for quickfire?
No, but let's do it.
It's not so bad, I promise. All right. If you could give one tip to an aspiring growth marketer, what would it be?
Become good friends with the CEO and make sure you have some side budgets for a rainy day.
I like it. Your favorite resource on mobile growth?
MDM, Mobile Dev Memo. Love it.
The best. Who is, in California, you're catching up on your vaccine rollout. So you're about to be able to go out to lunch again and meet people. Who in the industry is the person you'd most want to take to lunch and why?
That's so many people I want to meet. I want to meet my team. I haven't seen my team for such a long time.
True.
Wow, giving out one name. This is too hard. Pass.
I wanna create a little drama in your day to day. Who can we piss off the most that you didn't put them first?
I'll have a drink with Adam for a week. Congrats him on taking up Love in Public. That has been an amazing journey. This guy started small, raised just a bit of money, and against all odds, built a remarkable company.
Incredible.
And, he deserves a drink and a dinner, and I just miss the guy.
Yeah, I feel like he should maybe treat you because he's had a good quarter. But yeah, agreed. okay, the most important question. Are you ready? What is your favorite type of pancake?
I'm not a pancake guy.
No!
I know. Look, my wife and kids, I mean, we always have that debate. But I will do a Nutella banana pancake if I would be a pancake guy, for sure.
That's it's correct. Objectively, it's correct. So I can't accept that you're not a pancake guy, but I can accept your answer is good. Ofer, where can people find you if they want to hear more, kind of see what you're up to, stalk your professional life?
Hit me up on LinkedIn. I have a very catchy name, Ofer Yehudai. Good luck with that. Just Google Fiber and Ofer. And if you are here in the Bay Area, I'm vaccinated. Would love to get back to normality and meet. And Esther, I hope to see you in Tel Aviv soon as well.
I was going to say, I'm not going to be flying for a little while, but I very much expect you to come meet us for a drink when you're here, hopefully very soon.
I want to thank you for having me and for the little one to accommodate as well. It was fun.
Nava, you want to say you're welcome? She does not, but I want to thank you as well. You stole the words out of my mouth. This was, it was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to next year when we talk about our space and how yes. Silly it was that we all freaked out so very much. Amazing.
And that was Mobile Growth and Pancakes. To find out more about StoreMaven and how we can improve App Store performance, visit storemaven.com. And then make sure to search for Mobile Growth and Pancakes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found, and click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at StoreMaven, thanks for listening.